tomorrow.
Kiku wore a smile, but she was furious with herself.
You should have been more careful,
she told herself.
Stupid, stupid, stupid! Mariko-san warned you. Now you've allowed the evening to be ruined. And the magic's gone, gone, gone!
In truth, the heavy, almost tangible sexuality that had touched all of them had disappeared.
Perhaps that's just as well,
she thought.
At least Mariko and the Anshin-san are protected for one more night. Poor man. Poor lady. So sad.
She watched them talking, then sensed a change in tone between them.
Now I must leave thee,
Mariko was saying in Latin. Let us leave together.
I beg thee stay, for thy honour and hers, and mine, Anjin-san.
I do not want this, thy gift, he said. I want thee.
I am thine. Believe it, Anjin-san. Please stay, I beg thee, and know that tonight I am thine.
He did not insist that she stay. After she had gone, he lay back and put his arms under his head and stared out of the window at the night. Rain splattered the tiles. The wind gusted caressingly from the sea. Kiku was kneeling motionless in front of him. Her legs were stiff. She would have liked to lie down herself, but she did not wish to break his mood by the slightest movement.
You are not tired. Your legs do not ache, she told herself. Listen to the rain and think of lovely things. Think of Omi-san and the tea house in Mishima, and that you're alive, and that yesterday's earthquake was just another earthquake. Think of Toranaga-sama and the incredibly extravagant price that Gyoku-san had dared to ask initially for your contract. The soothsayer was right. It is your good fortune to make her rich beyond dreams. And if that part is true, why not all the rest? That one day you will marry a samurai you honor and have a son by him. That you will live and die in old age, part of his household, wealthy and honored. And that, miracle of miracles, your son will grow to equal estate, samurai, as will his son.
Kiku began to glow at her incredible, wonderful future. After a time, Blackthorn stretched luxuriously, a pleasing weariness upon him. He saw her and smiled.
Nandesuka, Anjin-san?
He shook his head kindly, got up, and opened the shoji to the next room. There was no maid kneeling beside the netted futons. He and Kiku were alone in the exquisite little house. He went into the sleeping room and began to take off his kimono. She hurried to help. He undressed completely, then put on the light silk sleeping kimono she held out for him. She opened the mosquito netting, and he lay down. Then Kiku changed also. He saw her take off the obi and the outer kimono, and the scarlet-edged lesser kimono of palest green, and finally the underskirt. She put on her peach-colored sleeping kimono, then removed the elaborate formal wig, and loosed her hair. It was blue-black and fine and very long. She knelt outside the net.
Dozo, Anjin-san?
Domo, he said.
Domo arigato gozaimashita,
she whispered. She slipped under the net and lay beside him. The candles and oil lamps burned brightly. He was glad of the light because she was so beautiful. His desperate need had vanished, though the ache remained. I don't desire you, Kiku-chan, he thought. Even if you were Mariko, it would be the same. Even though you're the most beautiful woman I've ever seen, more beautiful even than Midori-san, who I thought was more beautiful than any goddess. I don't desire you. Later, perhaps, but not now. So sorry. Her hand reached out and touched him.
Doso?
Iye, he said gently, shaking his head. He held her hand, then slipped an arm under her shoulders. Obediently, she nestled against him, understanding at once. Her perfume mingled with the fragrance of the sheets and futons. So clean, he thought, Everything's so incredibly clean. What was it Rodriguez had said? The Japan's a heaven on earth, Inglés, if you know where to look. Or, this is paradise, Inglés. I don't remember. I only know it's not there, across the sea, where I thought it was. It's not there. Heaven on earth is here.
Chapter 41. The courier galloped down the road in darkness toward the sleeping village. The sky was tinged with dawn, and the night fishing boats that had been netting near the shoals were just coming in. He had ridden without rest from Mishima over the mountain passes and bad roads, commandeering fresh horses wherever he could. His horse pounded through the village streets, covert eyes watching him now, across the square and up the road to the fortress. His standard carried Torinaga's cipher, and he knew the current password. Nevertheless, he was challenged and identified four times before he was allowed entrance and audience with the officer of the watch.
"Urgent dispatches from Mishima, Naga-san, from Lord Hiromatsu!"
Naga took the scroll and hurried inside. At the heavily guarded shoji, he stopped.
"Father?"
"Yes?"
Naga slid back the door and waited. Toranaga's sword slipped back into its scabbard. One of the guards brought an oil lamp. Toranaga sat up in his mosquito net and broke the seal. 2 weeks ago, he had ordered Hiromatsu with an elite regiment secretly to Mishima, the castle city on the Tokaido Road that guarded the entrance to the pass leading across the mountains to the cities of Atami and Odawara on the east coast of Izu. Atami was the gateway to Odawara to the north. Odawara was the key to the defense of the whole Kanto. Hiromatsu wrote,
"Sire, your half-brother, Sataki, Lord of Shinano, arrived here today from Osaka, asking for safe conduct to see you at Anjiro. He travels formally with 100 samurai and bearers under the cipher of the new Council of Regents. I regret to tell you, the Lady Kiritsubo's news is correct. Sataki's turned traitor, and is openly flaunting his allegiance to Ishido. What she did not know is that Sataki is now a regent in place of Lord Sugiyama. He showed me his official appointment, correctly signed by Ishido, Kiyama, Onoshi, and Ito. It was all I could do to restrain my men at his arrogance and obey your orders to let any messenger from Ishido pass. I wanted to kill this dung-eater myself. Traveling with him is the barbarian priest Tsuko-san, who arrived by sea at the port of Numatsu, coming from Nagasaki. He asked permission to visit you, so I sent him with the same party. I've sent 200 of my men to escort them. They'll arrive within 2 days at Anjiro. When do you return to Edo? Spies say GQ's mobilizing secretly, and news comes from Edo that the northern clans are ready to throw in with Ishido, now that Sataki Shinano is against you. I beg you to leave Anjiro at once. Retreat by sea. Let Sataki follow you to Edo, where we can deal with him properly."
Toranaga slammed his fist against the floor.
"Naga-san, fetch Buntaro-san, Yabu-san, and Umi-san here at once."
They arrived very quickly. Toranaga read them the message.
"We'd better cancel all training. Send the musket regiment, every man, into the mountains. We don't want any security leaks now."
Omi said,
"Please excuse me, sire, but you might consider intercepting the party over the mountains. Say at Yokose. Invite Lord Sataki," he chose the title carefully, "to take the waters at one of the nearby spas, but have the meeting at Yokose. Then, after he's delivered his message, he and all his men can be turned back, escorted to the frontier, or destroyed, just as you wish."
"I don't know, Yokose,"
Yabu said importantly.
"It's beautiful, almost in the center of Izu, sire, over the mountains in a valley cleft. It's beside the river Kano. The Kano flows north, eventually through Mishima and Numazu, to the sea, eh? Yokose is at a crossroads. The roads go north-south and east-west. Yes, Yokose'd be a good place to meet, sire. Shuzenji Spa's nearby, Very hot. Very good. One of our best. You should visit it, sire. I think Omi-san's made a good suggestion.
Could we defend it easily?
Omi said quickly.
Yes, sire. There's a bridge. The land falls steeply from the mountains. Any attackers would have to fight up a snaking road. Both passes can be held with few men. You could never be ambushed. We have more than enough men to defend you and butcher 10 times their number, if need be.
We butcher them whatever happens, ne?
Buntaro said with contempt.
But better there than here. Sire, please let me make the place safe. 500 archers, no musketeers, all horsemen. Added to the men my father sent, we'll have more than enough.
Toranaga checked the date on the dispatch.
They'll reach the crossroads when?
Yabu looked at Omi for confirmation.
Tonight at the earliest?
Yes, perhaps not until dawn tomorrow.
Buntaro-san, leave at once,
Toranaga said.
Contain them at Yokose, but keep them the other side of the river. I'll leave at dawn tomorrow with another 100 men. We should be there by noon. Yabu-san, you take charge of our musket regiment for the moment and guard our retreat. Put it in ambush across the Heikawa Road, on the skyline, so we can fall back through you if necessary.
Buntaro started to leave, but stopped as Yabu said uneasily,
How can there be treachery, sire? They've only 100 men.
I expect treachery. Lord Zataki wouldn't put his head into my hands without a plan, for of course I'll take his head if I can.
Toranaga said,
Without him to lead his fanatics, we'll have a far better chance to get through his mountains.
But why is he risking everything? Why?
Omi said tentatively.
Could he be ready to turn ally again?
They all knew the long-standing rivalry that had existed between the half-brothers. A friendly rivalry up till now.
No, not him. I never trusted him before. Would any of you trust him now?
They shook their heads. Yabu said,
Surely there's nothing to disturb you, sire. Lord Zataki's a regent, yes. But he's only a messenger, eh?
Fool.
Toranaga wanted to shout.
Don't you understand anything? We'll soon know. Buntaro-san, go at once.
Yes, sire. I'll choose the meeting place carefully. But don't let him within 10 paces. I was with him in Korea. He's too quick with his sword.
Yes.
Buntaro hurried away.
Yabu said, Perhaps Zataki can be tempted to betray Ishido. Some prize, perhaps. What's his bait? Even without his leadership, the Shinano Mountains are cruel.
The bait's obvious,
Toranaga said.
The Kanto. Isn't that what he wants? Has always wanted? Isn't that what all my enemies want? Isn't that what Ishido himself wants?
They did not answer him. There was no need. Toranaga said gravely,
May Buddha help us. The Taiko's peace has ended. War is beginning.
Blackthorn Sea Ears had heard the urgency in the approaching hoofs, and they had whispered danger. He had come out of sleep instantly, ready to attack or retreat, all his senses tuned. The hoofs passed, then headed up the hill toward the fortress, to die away again. He waited.
No sound of a following escort. Probably a lone messenger, he thought. From where? Is it war already?
Dawn was imminent. Now Blackthorn could see a small part of the sky. It was overcast and laden with rain, the air warm with a tang of salt in it, billowing the net from time to time. A mosquito whined faintly outside. He was very pleased to be within, safe for the moment.
Enjoy the safety and the tranquility, while it lasts,
he told himself. Kiku was sleeping next to him, curled up like a kitten. Sleep-tousled, she seemed more beautiful to him. He carefully relaxed back into the softness of the quilts on the tatami floor.
This is so much better than a bed. Better than any bunk.
My God, how much better! But soon to be back aboard, nay? Soon to fall on the black ship and take her, nay? I think Torunaga's agreed, even though he hasn't said so openly. Hasn't he just agreed in Japanese fashion? Nothing can ever be solved in Japan except by Japanese methods. Yes, I believe that's the truth. I wanted to be better informed. Didn't he tell Mariko to translate everything and explain about his political problems? I wanted money to buy my new crew. Didn't he give me 2,000 koku? I asked for 200 or 300 corsairs. Hasn't he given me 200 samurai with all the power and rank I need? Will they obey me? Of course. He made me samurai and Hatamoto. So they'll obey to the death, and I'll bring them aboard Erasmus. They'll be my boarding party, and I will lead the attack. How unbelievably lucky I am. I've everything I want. Except Mariko. But I even have her. I have her secret spirit and her love. And I possessed her body last night, the magic night that never existed. We loved without loving. Is that so different? There's no love between Kiku and me, just a desire that blossomed. It was grand for me. I hope it was also grand for her. I tried to be Japanese holy and do my duty, to please her as she pleased me. He remembered how he had used a pleasure ring. He had felt most awkward and shy, and had turned away to put it on, petrified that his strength would vanish. But it had not. And then when it was in place, they had pillowed again. Her body shuddered and twisted, and the tremoring had lifted him to a more urgent plane than any he had ever known. Afterwards, when he could breathe again, he began to laugh, and she had whispered, "Why do you laugh?" And he had answered, "I don't know, except you make me happy." I've never laughed at that moment, ever before. It made everything perfect. I do not love Kiku-san. I cherish her. I love Mariko-san without reservation, and I like Hujiko-san completely. Would you pillow with Hujiko? No. At least, I don't think I could. Isn't that your duty? If you accept the privileges of samurai and require others to treat you totally as samurai, with all that that means, you must accept the responsibilities and duties, eh? That's only fair, eh? And honorable, eh? It's your duty to give Hujiko a son. And Felicity, what would she say to that? And when you sail away, what about Hujiko-san, and what about Mariko-san? Will you truly return here, leaving the knighthood and the even greater honors that you'll surely be granted, provided you come back laden with treasure? Will you sail outward bound once more into the hostile deep, to smash through the freezing horror of Magellan's Pass, to endure storm and sea and scurvy and mutiny for another 698 days to make a second landfall here? To take up this life again? Decide. Then he remembered what Mariko had told him about compartments of the mind. Be Japanese, Anjin-san. You must, to survive. Do what we do. Surrender yourself to the rhythm of karma, unashamed. Be content with the forces beyond your control. Put all things into their own separate compartments and yield to Wa, the harmony of life. Yield, Anjin-san. Karma is karma, ne?
Yes, I'll decide when the time comes. First, I have to get the crew. Next, I capture the black ship. Then I sail halfway around the earth to England. Then I'll buy and equip the warships. And then I'll decide. Karma is karma. Kiku stirred, then buried herself deeper into the quilts, nestling closer. He felt the warmth of her through their silk kimonos, and he was kindled.
Anjin-san,
she murmured, still in sleep. Why? He did not awaken her. He was content to cradle her and rest, enraptured by the serenity that the yielding had given him. But before he went into sleep, he blessed Mariko for teaching him.
"Yes, Omei-sama, certainly,"
Gyoko said.
"I'll fetch the Anjin-san at once. Please excuse me. Akko, come with me."
Gyoko sent Akko for tea, then bustled out into the garden, wondering what vital news the galloping night messenger had brought, for she too had heard the hoofs.
"And why is Omei so strange today?"
she asked herself.
"Why so cold, rough, and dangerous? And why did he come himself on so menial a task? Why not send any samurai?" "Ah, who knows? Omi's a man. How can you understand them, particularly samurai? But something's wrong, terribly wrong. Did the messenger bring a declaration of war?" "I suppose so. If it's war, then it's war. And war never hurt our business. Daimyos and samurai will still need entertaining, as always. More so in war. And in war, money means less than ever to them. Good, good, good."
She smiled to herself.
"Remember the war days, 40-odd years ago, when you were 17, and the toast of Mishima? Remember all the laughter and pillowing and proud nights that melted into days? Remember serving old Baldy himself, Yabu's father, the nice old gentleman who boiled criminals like his son after him? Remember how hard you had to work to make him soft, unlike the son?"
Yoko chuckled.
"We pillowed 3 days and three nights. Then he became my patron for a whole year. Good times. A good man. Oh, how we pillowed. War or peace, never mind. Shigata ganai. There's enough invested with the money lenders and rice merchants. A little here, a little there. Then there's the sake factory in Odawara. The tea house in Mishima's thriving. And today, Lord Toranaga's going to buy Kiku's contract. Yes, interesting times ahead. And how fantastically interesting the previous night had been. Kiku had been brilliant. The Anjin-san's outburst mortifying. Kiku had made as deft a recovery as any courtesan in the land. And then, when the Lady Toda had left them, Kiku's artistry had made everything perfect and the night blissful. Ah, men and women, so predictable, especially men. Babies always, vain, difficult, terrible, petulant, pliant, horrible. Marvelous most rarely, but all born with that single incredible redeeming feature that we in the trade refer to as the jade root. Turtle head, yang peak, steaming shaft, male thruster, or simply piece of meat. How insulting, yet how apt.
Gyoko chuckled and asked herself for the 10,000th time,
"By all gods living and dead and yet to be born, what in the world would we do in this world without the piece of meat?"
She hurried on again, her footsteps just loud enough to announce her presence. She mounted the polished cedar steps. Her knock was practiced.
"Anjin-san? Anjin-san, so sorry, but Lord Toranaga sent for you. You're ordered to the fortress at once."
"What? What did you say?"
She repeated it in simpler language.
"Ah, understand. All right, I there quick,"
she heard him say with his funny accent.
"So sorry. Please excuse me. Kiku-san?" "Yes, Mama-san."
In a moment, the shoji slid open. Kiku smiled at her, the kimono clinging and her hair prettily disarrayed.
"Good morning, Mama-san. Did you have pleasant dreams?" "Yes, yes, thank you. So sorry to disturb you. Kiku-chan, do you wish for fresh cha?" "Oh."
Kiku's smile disappeared. This was the code sentence that Gyoko could freely use in front of any client,
which told Kiku that her most special client, Omi-san, was in the tea house. Then Kiku could always finish her story or song or dance more quickly, and go to Omi-san if she wished. Kiku pillowed with very few, though she entertained many, if they paid the fee. Very, very few could afford all her services.
"What is it?"
Gyoko asked narrowly.
"Nothing, Mama-san. Anjin-san," Kiku called out gaily. "So sorry. Would you like cha?"
"Yes, please."
"It will be here at once,"
Gyoko said.
"Ako, hurry up, child."
"Yes, mistress."
Ako brought in the tray of tea and two cups and poured, and Gyoko left, again apologizing for disturbing him. Kiku gave Blackthorn the cup herself. He drank it thirstily, then she helped him to dress. Ako laid out a fresh kimono for her. Kiku was most attentive, but she was consumed with the knowledge that soon she would have to accompany the Anjin-san outside the gateway to bow him homeward. It was good manners. More than that, it was her privilege and duty. Only courtesans of the first rank were ever allowed to go beyond the threshold to bestow that rare honor. All others had to stay within the courtyard. It was unthinkable for her not to finish the night, as was expected. That would be a terrible insult to her guest. And yet, for the first time in her life, Kiku did not wish to bow one guest homeward in front of another guest.
"I can't. Not the Anjin-san in front of Omi-san." "Why?" she asked herself. "Is it because the Anjin-san barbarian, and you're ashamed that all the world will know you've been possessed by a barbarian?" "No. All Anjiro knows already, and a man is like any other, most of the time. This man is Samurai Hatamoto, an admiral of Lord Toranaga's ships." "No, nothing like that." "What is it, then?" "It's because I found in the night that I was shamed by what Omi-san did to him, as we should all be shamed. Omi-san should never have done that. The Anjin-san is branded, and my fingers seem to feel the brand through the silk of his kimono. I burn with shame for him, a good man to whom that should not have been done. Am I defiled? No, of course not. Just shamed before him, and shamed before Omi-san for being ashamed."
Then, in the reaches of her mind, she heard Mama-san saying again,
"Child, child, leave man things to men. Laughter is our balm against them, and the world, and the gods, and even old age."
"Kiku-san."
"Yes, Anjin-san?"
"Now I go."
"Yes. Let us go together," she said.
He took her face tenderly in his rough hands and kissed her.
"Thank you. No words enough to thank."
"It is I who should thank you. Please allow me to thank you, Anjin-san. Let us leave now."
She allowed Ako to put the finishing touches to her hair, which she left hanging loosely, tied the sash of the fresh kimono, and went with him. Kiku walked beside him, as was her privilege, not a few steps behind as a wife or consort or daughter or servant was obliged to. He put his hand on her shoulder momentarily, and this was distasteful to her, for they were not in the privacy of a room. Then she had a sudden, horrible premonition that he would kiss her publicly, which Mariko had mentioned was barbarian custom, at the gate.
"Oh, Buddha, let that not happen,"
she thought, almost faint with fright. His swords were in the reception room. By custom, all weapons were left under guard, outside the pleasure rooms, to avoid lethal quarrels with other clients, and also to prevent any lady from ending her life. Not all ladies of the Willow World were happy or fortunate. Blackthorn put his swords into his sash. Kiku bowed him through to the veranda, where he stepped into his thongs. Gyoko and others assembled to bow him away, an honored guest. Beyond the gateway was the village square and the sea. Many samurai were there milling about, Buntaro among them. Kiku could not see Omi, though she was certain he would be watching somewhere. The Anjin-san seemed immensely tall, she so small beside him. Now they were crossing the courtyard. Both saw Omi at the same time. He was standing near the gateway. Blackthorn stopped.
Morning, Omi-san, he said, as a friend, and bowed as a friend, not knowing that Omi and Kiku were more than friends.
How could he know? She thought. No one has told him. Why should they tell him? And what does that matter anyway?
Good morning, Anjin-san.
Omi's voice was friendly, too, but she saw him bow with only sufficient politeness. Then his jet eyes turned to her again, and she bowed, her smile perfect.
Good morning, Omi-san. This house is honored.
Thank you, Kiku-san. Thank you.
She felt his searching gaze, but pretended not to notice, keeping her eyes demurely lowered. Kyoko and the maids and the courtesans who were free watched from the veranda.
I go fortress, Omi-san,
Blackthorn was saying.
All's well? Yes. Lord Toranaga sent for you. Go now. Hope see you soon.
Yes. Kiku glanced up. Omi was still staring at her. She smiled her best smile and looked at the Anjin-san. He was watching Omi intently. Then feeling her eyes, he turned to her and smiled back. It seemed to her a strained smile.
So sorry, Kiku-san. Omi-san. Must go now.
He bowed to Omi. It was returned. He went through the gate. She followed, hardly breathing. Movement stopped in the square. In the silence, she saw him turn back, and for a hideous moment, she knew he was going to embrace her. But, to her enormous relief, he did not, and just stood there, waiting, as a civilized person would wait. She bowed with all the tenderness she could muster, Omi's gaze boring into her.
Thank you, Anjin-san,
she said, and smiled at him alone. A sigh went through the square.
Thank you.
Then added the time-honored,
Please visit us again. I will count the moments until we meet again.
He bowed with just the right amount of carelessness, strode off arrogantly as a samurai of quality would. Then, because he had treated her very correctly, and to repay Omi for the unnecessary coldness in his bow, instead of going back into her house at once, she stayed where she was and looked after the Anjin-san to give him greater honor. She waited until he was at the last corner. She saw him look back. He waved once. She bowed very low, now delighted with the attention in the square, pretending not to notice it. And only when he was truly gone did she walk back, with pride and with great elegance. And until the gate was closed, every man watched her, feeding on such beauty, envious of the Anjin-san, who must be much man for her to wait like that.
You're so pretty, Omi said.
I wish that were true, Omi-san,
she said with a second-best smile.
Would you like some cha, Omi-sama? Or food?
With you? Yes.
Kyoko joined them unctuously.
Please excuse my bad manners, Omi-sama. Do take food with us now, please. Have you had a first meal?
No, not yet, but I'm not hungry.
Omi glanced across at Kiku.
Have you eaten yet?
Kyoko interrupted expansively.
Allow us to bring you something that won't be too inadequate, Omi-sama. Kiku-san, when you've changed, you will join us, ne? Of course. Please excuse me, Omi-sama, for appearing like this. So sorry.
The girl ran off, pretending a happiness she did not feel, Ako in tow. Omi said shortly,
I would like to be with her tonight, for food and entertainment.
Of course, Omi-sama,
Kyoko replied with a low bow, knowing that she would not be free.
You honor my house and do us too much honor. Kiku-san is so fortunate that you favor her.
3,000 koku!
Toranaga was scandalized.
Yes, sire,
Mariko said. They were on the private veranda in the fortress. Rain had begun already, but did not reduce the heat of the day. She felt listless and very tired, and longed for autumn coolness.
I'm sorry, but I could not negotiate the woman down any further. I talked until just before dawn. So sorry, sire, but you did order me to conclude an arrangement last night.
But 3,000, Mariko-san! That's usury!
Actually, Torunaga was glad to have a new problem to take his mind away from the worry that beset him. The Christian priest Tsuku-san, traveling with Zataki, the upstart regent, augured nothing but trouble. He had examined every avenue of escape, every route of retreat and attack that any man could imagine, and the answer was always the same.
If Ishido moves quickly, I'm lost. I've got to find time. But how? If I were Ishido, I'd start now, before the rains stop. I'd get men into position, just as the Taiko and I did, to destroy the Beppu. The same plan will always win. It's so simple. Ishido can't be so stupid as not to see that the only real way to defend the Kanto is to own Osaka and all the lands between Edo and Osaka. As long as Osaka's unfriendly, the Kanto's in danger. The Taiko knew it. Why else did he give it to me? Without Kiyama, Onoshi, and the barbarian priests.
With an effort, Torunaga put tomorrow into its own compartment and concentrated totally on this impossible amount of money.
3,000 kokus out of the question.
I agree, sire. You're correct. It's my fault entirely. I thought even 500 would be excessive, but the Gyoko woman would come no lower. There is one concession, though.
What?
Gyoko begged the honor of reducing the price to 2,500 koku if you would honor her by agreeing to see her privately for one stick of time.
A mama-san would give up 500 koku just to speak to me?
Yes, sire.
Why?
He asked suspiciously.
She told me her reason, sire, but humbly begged that she be allowed to explain to you herself. I believe her proposal would be interesting to you, sire. And 500 koku. It would be a saving. I'm appalled that I couldn't make a better arrangement, even though Kiku-san is of the first rank and completely merits that status. I know I failed you.
I agree, Torunaga said sourly. Even 1,000 would be too much. This is Izu, not Kyoto.
You're quite right, sir. I told the woman that the price was so ridiculous I could not possibly agree to it myself, even though you'd given me direct orders to complete the bargain last night. I hope you will forgive my disobedience, but I said that I would first have to consult with the Lady Kashiki, Omi-san's mother, who's the most senior lady here, before the arrangement was confirmed.
Torunaga brightened, his other worries forgotten.
Ah, so it's arranged, but not arranged.
Yes, sir. Nothing is binding until I can consult with the lady. I said I'd give an answer at noon today.
Please forgive my disobedience. You should have concluded the arrangement as I ordered.
Torunaga was secretly delighted that Mariko had cleverly given him the opportunity to agree or disagree without any loss of face. It would have been unthinkable for him personally to quibble over a mere matter of money.
But, oh, Ko, 3,000 koku. You say the girl's contract's worth enough rice to feed 1,000 families for 3 years?
Worth every grain of rice to the right man.
Torunaga eyed her shrewdly.
Oh? Tell me about her. And what happened?
She told him everything, except her feeling for the Anjin-san and the depth of his feeling toward her, or about Kiku's offer to her.
Good. Yes, very good. That was clever.
Yes, Torunaga said.
He must have pleased her very much for her to stand at the gateway like that the first time.
Most of Anjiro had been waiting for that moment, to see how the two of them would act, the barbarian and the willow lady of the first rank.
Yes.
The 3 koku invested was well worth it for him. His fame will run before him now.
Yes,
Mariko agreed, more than a little proud of Blackthorn's success.
She's an exceptional lady, sire.
Torunaga was intrigued by Mariko's confidence in her arrangement. But 500 koku for the contract would have been more fair. 500 koku was more than most mamasans made in a lifetime, so for one of them even to consider giving away 500.
Worth every grain, you say? I can hardly believe that.
To the right man, sire, I believe that. But I could not judge who would be the right man.
There was a knock on the shoji.
Yes? The Anjin-san's at the main gate, sire.
Bring him here.
Yes, sir.
Torunaga fanned himself. He'd been watching Mariko covertly and had seen the momentary light in her face. He had deliberately not warned her that he had sent for him.
What to do? Everything that is planned still applies. But now I need Buntaro and the Anjin-san and Omi-san more than ever. And Mariko, very much.
Good morning, Torunaga-sama.
He returned Blackthorn's bow and noted the sudden warmth when the man saw Mariko. There were formal greetings and replies. Then he said,
Mariko-san, tell him that he is to leave with me at dawn. You also. You will continue on to Osaka.
A chill went through her.
Yes, sir.
I go Osaka, Torunaga-sama?
Blackthorn asked.
No, Anjin-san. Mariko-san. Tell him I'm going to the Shuzenji Spa for a day or two. You both will accompany me there. You'll go on to Osaka. He will journey with you to the border, then go on to Edo alone.
He watched them narrowly as Blackthorn spoke to her, rapidly and urgently.
So sorry, Torunaga-sama, but the Anjin-san humbly asks if he could borrow me for a few more days. He says, please excuse me, that my presence with him would greatly speed up the matter of his ship. Then, if it pleases you, he would immediately take one of your coastal ships and ferry me to Osaka, going on to Nagasaki himself. He suggests this might save time.
I haven't decided anything about his ship yet, or about a crew. He may not need to go to Nagasaki. Make that very clear. No, nothing is decided, but I'll consider the request about you. You'll get my decision tomorrow. You can go now. Oh, yes, lastly, Mariko-san, tell him that I want his genealogy. He can write it down, and you'll translate it, affirming its correctness.
Yes, sire. Do you want it at once?
No. When he arrives at Edo, will be time enough.
Mariko explained to Blackthorn.
Why does he want that?
He asked. Mariko stared at him.
Of course, all samurai have to have their births and deaths recorded, Anjin-san, as well as their fiefs and land grants. How else can a liege lord keep everything balanced? Isn't it the same in your country? Here, by law, all our citizens are in official records, even Eta. Births, deaths, marriages. Every hamlet or village or city street has its official scroll. How else can you be sure where and to whom you belong?
We don't write it down. Not always. And not officially. Everyone's recorded. Everyone?
Oh, yes. Even Eta, Anjin-san. It's important, ne? Then no one can pretend to be what he is not. Wrongdoers can be caught more easily. And men and women or parents can't cheat in marriage, ne?
Blackthorn put that aside for later consideration and played another card in the game he had joined with Torunaga, that he hoped would lead to the death of the black ship. Mariko listened attentively, questioned him a moment, then turned to Torunaga.
Sire, the Anjin-san thanks you for your favor and your many gifts. He asks if you would honor him by choosing his 200 vassals for him. He says your guidance in this would be worth anything.
Is it worth 1,000 koku?
Torunaga asked at once. He saw her surprise. And the Anjin-san's.
I'm glad you're still transparent, Anjin-san, for all your veneer of civilization, he thought. If I were a gambling person, I'd wager that that wasn't your idea, to ask for my guidance.
Aye,
he heard Blackthorn say firmly.
Good, he replied crisply. Since the Anjin-san's so generous, I'll accept his offer. 1,000 koku. That will help some other needy samurai. Tell him his men will be waiting for him in Edo. I'll see you at dawn tomorrow, Anjin-san.
Yes.
Thank you, Torunaga-sama. Mariko-san, Consult with the Lady Kashigi at once. Since you approved the amount, I imagine she'll agree to your arrangement, however hideous it seems. Though I'd suppose she'll need until dawn tomorrow to give such a ridiculous sum her full consideration. Send some menial to order the Gyoko woman here at sunset. She can bring the courtesan with her. Kiku-san can sing while we talk, ne?
He dismissed them, delighted to have saved 1,500 koku.
People are so extravagant, he thought benignly. Will that leave me enough to get a crew?
Blackthorn asked.
Oh, yes, Anjin-san. But he hasn't agreed to allow you to go to Nagasaki yet,
Mariko said.
500 koku would be more than enough to live on for a year. And the other 500 will give you about 180 koban in gold to buy seamen. That's a very great deal of money.
Fujiko lifted herself painfully and spoke to Mariko.
Your consort says that you shouldn't worry, Anjin-san. She can give you letters of credit to certain moneylenders who will advance you all that you'll need. She'll arrange everything.
Yes, but haven't I got to pay all my retainers? How do I pay for a house, Hujiko-san? My household?
Mariko was shocked.
Please, so sorry, but this is, of course, not your worry. Your consort has told you that she will take care of everything. She...
Hujiko interrupted, and the two women spoke together for a moment.
Ah, so des, Hujiko-san.
Mariko turned back to Blackthorn.
She says you must not waste time thinking about it. She begs you, please, to spend your time worrying only about Lord Toranaga's problems. She has money of her own, which she can draw upon, should it be necessary.
Blackthorn blinked.
She'll lend me her own money?
Oh, no, Anjin-san. Of course, she'll give it to you, if you need it, Anjin-san. Don't forget, your problem's only this year,
Mariko explained.
Next year, you're rich, Anjin-san. As to your retainers, for 1 year they'll get 2 koku each. Don't forget Toranaga-sama's giving you all their arms and horses, and 2 koku's enough to feed them and their horses and families. And don't forget, too, you gave Lord Toranaga half your year's income to ensure that they would be chosen by him personally. That's a tremendous honor, Anjin-san.
You think so?
Oh, certainly. Hujiko-san agrees wholeheartedly. You were most shrewd to think of that.
Thank you.
Blackthorn allowed a little of his pleasure to show.
You're getting your wits back again, and you're beginning to think like them, he told himself happily. Yes, that was clever to co-op Toranaga. Now you'll get the best men possible. And you could never have done it alone. What's 1,000 koku against the black ship? So yet another of the things Mariko had said was true. That one of Toranaga's weaknesses was that he was a miser. Of course, she had not said so directly, only that Toranaga made all his incredible wealth go further than any daimyo in the kingdom.
This clue added to his own observations that Toranaga's clothes were as simple as his food, and his style of living little different from that of an ordinary samurai, had given him another key to unlock Toranaga.
Thank God for Mariko and old Friar Domingo.
Blackthorn's memory took him back to the jail, and he thought how close he had been to death then, and how close he was to death now, even with all his honors.
What Toranaga gives, he can take away. You think he's your friend, but if he'll assassinate a wife and murder a favorite son, how would you value his friendship or your life?
I don't, Blackthorn told himself, renewing his pledge.
That's karma. I can do nothing about karma, and I've been living near death all my life, so nothing's new. I yield to karma in all its beauty. I accept karma in all its majesty. I trust karma to get me through the next 6 months. Then, by this time next year, I'll be scudding through Magellan's Pass, bound for London Town, out of his reach.
Hujiko was talking. He watched her. The bandages were still discolored. She was lying painfully on the futons, a maid fanning her.
She'll arrange everything for you by dawn, Anjin-san, Mariko said. Your consort suggests you take 2 horses and a baggage horse. 1 manservant and 1 maid.
A manservant will be enough.
So sorry. The maidservant must go to serve you. And, of course, a cook and a cook helper.
Won't there be kitchens that I can use?
Oh, yes. But you still have to have your own cook, Sanjin-san. You're a Hatamoto.
He knew there was no point in arguing.
I'll leave everything to you.
Oh, that's so wise of you, Anjin-san. Very wise. Now I must go and pack. Please excuse me.
Mariko left happily. They had not talked much, just enough in Latin, for each to know that though the magic night had never come to pass, and was, like the other night, never to be discussed, both would live in their imaginations forever.
Thou.
Thou.
I was so proud when I heard she stood at the gate for such a long time. Thy face is immense now, Anjin-san.
For a moment, I almost forgot what thou hadst told me. Involuntarily, I was within a hair's distance of kissing her in public.
Oh, Ko, Anjin-san, that would have been terrible.
Oh, Ko, thou art right. If it had not been for thee, I would be faceless, a worm wriggling in the dust.
Instead, thou art vast and famous, and thy prowess undoubted. Didst thou enjoy one of those curious devices?
Ah, fair lady, in my land we have an ancient custom. A man does not discuss the intimate habits of one lady with another.
We have the same custom, but I asked if it was enjoyed, not used. Yes, we very much have the same custom. I am glad that the evening was to thy liking.
Her smile was warming.
To be Japanese in Japan is wise, nay?
I cannot thank thee enough for teaching me, for guiding me, for opening my eyes, he said. For loving me. Instead, he added, for being.
I have done nothing. Thou art thyself.
I thank thee for everything, and thy gift.
I am glad thy pleasure was great.
I am sad thy pleasure was nil. I am so glad that thou art also ordered to the spa. But why to Osaka?
Oh, I am not ordered to Osaka. Lord Torunaga allows me to go. We have property and family business matters that must be seen to. Also, my son is there now. Then, too, I can carry private messages to Kiritsubo-san and the Lady Sazuko.
Isn't that dangerous? Remember thy words. War is coming, and Ishido is the enemy. Did not Lord Torunaga say the same?
Yes, but there is no war yet, Anjin-san. And samurai do not war on their women, unless women war on them.
But thou? What about the bridge at Osaka, across the moat? Did thou not go with me to dupe Ishido? He would have killed me. And remember thy sword at the fight on the ship.
Ah, that was only to protect the life of my liege lord, and my own life, when it was threatened. That was my duty, Anjin-san. Nothing more. There is no danger for me. I have been lady-in-waiting to Lady Yodoko, the Taiko's widow, even the Lady Ochiba, mother of the heir. I'm honored to be their friend. I'm quite safe. That's why Torunaga-sama allows me to go. But for thee in Osaka, there is no safety, because of Lord Torunaga's escape, and of what was done to Lord Ishido. So thou must never land there. Nagasaki will be safe for thee.
Then he has agreed that I may go?
No, not yet. But when he does, it will be safe. He has power in Nagasaki.
He wanted to ask, greater than the Jesuits? Instead, he said only,
I pray Lord Torunaga orders thee by ship to Osaka.
He saw her tremble slightly.
What troubles thee?
Nothing except that the sea does not please me.
Will he order it thus?
I don't know, but...
She changed back into the mischievous teaser, and into Portuguese.
But for your health, we should bring Kiku-san along with us, ne? Tonight, are you going again into her vermilion chamber?
He laughed with her.
Ha ha! That'd be fine, though
Then he stopped, as with sudden clarity he remembered Omi's look.
You know, Mariko-san, when I was at the gate, I'm sure I saw Omi-san looking at her in a very special way, as a lover would look. A jealous lover. I didn't know they were lovers.
I understand he's one of her customers, a favored customer, yes. But why should that concern you?
Because it was a very private look. Very special.
He has no special claim on her, Anjin-san. She's a courtesan of the first rank. She's free to accept or reject whom she pleases.
If we were in Europe and I pillowed his girl. You understand, Mariko-san?
I think I understand, Anjin-san. But why should that concern you? You're not in Europe, Anjin-san. He has no formal claim on her. If she wants to accept you and him, or even reject you or reject him, what has that to do with anything?
I'd say he was her lover, in our sense of the word. That's got everything to do with it, eh?
But what has that to do with her profession? Or pillowing?
Eventually he had thanked her again, and left it at that. But his head and his heart told him to beware.
It's not as simple as you think, Mariko-san. Even here. Omi believes Kiku-san's more than special, even if she doesn't feel the same. Wish I'd known he was her lover. I'd rather have Omi a friend than an enemy. Could Mariko be right again? That pillowing has nothing to do with loving for them?
God help me, I'm so mixed up. Part Eastern now, mostly Western. I've got to act like them and think like them to stay alive. And much of what they believe is so much better than our way that it's tempting to want to become one of them totally. And yet, home is there, across the sea, where my ancestors were birthed, where my family lives, Felicity and Tudor and Elizabeth. Ne?
Anjin-san?
Yes, Hujiko-san.
Please don't worry about money. I can't bear to see you worried. I'm so sorry that I cannot go to Edo with you.
Soon see in Edo, ne?
Yes. The doctor says I'm healing well, and Omi's mother agrees.
When doctor here?
Sunset. So sorry I cannot go with you tomorrow. Please excuse me.
He wondered again about his duty to his consort. Then he put that thought back into its compartment as a new one rushed forward. He examined this idea and found it fine. And urgent.
I go now. Come back soon. You rest. Understand?
Yes. Please excuse me for not getting up and for... so sorry.
He left her and went to his own room. He took a pistol out of its hiding place, checked the priming, and stuck it under his kimono. Then he walked alone to Omi's house. Omi was not there. Midori welcomed him and offered char, which she politely refused. Her 2-year-old infant was in her arms. She said,
"So sorry, but Omi would return soon. Would the Anjin-san like to wait?"
She seemed ill at ease, though polite and attentive. Again he refused and thanked her, saying he would come back later. Then he went below to his own house. Villagers had already cleared the ground, preparing to rebuild everything. Nothing had been salvaged from the fire, except cooking utensils. Ujiko would not tell him the cost of rebuilding. It was very cheap, she had said.
Please don't concern yourself.
Kama, Anjin-sama, one of the villagers said. Yes. What could one do? Don't worry. Your house will soon be ready. Better than before.
Blackthorn saw Omi walking up the hill, taut and stern. He went to meet him. When Omi saw him, he seemed to lose some of his fury.
Ah, Anjin-san, he said cordially. I hear you're also leaving with Toranaga-sama at dawn. Very good. We can ride together.
Despite Omi's apparent friendliness, Blackthorn was very much on guard.
Listen, Omi-san. Now I go there.
He pointed toward the plateau.
Please, you go with me, yes? There's no training today. Understand. Please, you go with me, yes?
Omi saw that Blackthorn's hand was on the hilt of his killing sword, in the characteristic way, steadying it. Then his sharp eyes noticed the bulge under the sash, and he realized at once from its partially outlined shape that it was a concealed pistol.